This is the Indie Kids Climate Crisis Podcast,
where student reporters interview people about the climate crisis.
We talk to activists, organizers, scientists,
and reporters
about how climate change has affected them and us.
Hi, my name is Zahra and I'm in sixth grade.
My name is Lily and I'm in fifth grade.
My name is Key Brown and I'm in fifth grade.
We wanted to learn more about the climate crisis because it's affecting our planet.
I was one of the first people to go down and chain myself to the pipeline to say that we're putting our bodies on the line so people can wake up to what's happening, to the reality in Brooklyn, what National Grid has been doing to our communities.
That's Patti Rodriguez.
I am one of the organizers, activists for Frack Out of Brooklyn, which is a coalition that I've been working with through a grassroots organization called Mi Casa Resiste, which is like a community defense, like to defend our communities, you know, from displacement, especially like Black and Brown families, you know, in our neighborhoods, right? And in Brooklyn, in North Brooklyn. She is my daughter.
I'm Gia Rodriguez. I'm 9 going on 10.
She is one of the youth that's been around our space doing a lot of activist work too. We usually work at this Mayday space, which is a social justice center here in Bushwick. She's been around a lot of the protests and stuff too.
Thank you so much for taking your time to let us interview you. What do you do like when it comes to climate justice?
We've been fighting against this pipeline. It's a frack gas pipeline that National Grid is building underneath a lot of homes, low-income families, you know, a lot of poor families, a lot of Black and Brown families. This pipeline is going through Bushwick. It's going through Williamsburg. It's going through Bed-Stuy. It's going through East New York, Brownsville, right? And they want to build it all the way to Greenpoint, where the power plant is.
Fracked gas is really toxic.
Can cause a lot of things like cancer, you know, gets people sick. It's like they're treating our neighborhoods worse than others.
Patti says that when it comes to oil and gas companies,
they usually do things without permission. They usually don't say anything. They don't inform the community. They don't give us consent. Like we found out the pipeline was being built in 2020 when they started building it in 2017. That's why we need to fight for our own rights and we need to stand up for our communities. These pipelines are very dangerous. They can explode. They can leak. Leaks are very dangerous even, you know, and that happens often. So which is why we are standing up. Other neighbors of mine are part of this fight. You know, it's just regular people who are taking up, you know, this fight and really, you know, making the art and making the language to put it out there so that people can know what's happening. Last year, October 2020, we did an action, right? It was a protest. And when you do a direct action, it's when you do an action that's basically to grab attention and to show about a struggle, right? So we had an action, a protest action, where some of us chained ourselves to the pipeline itself. And that protest, actually, we learned it from other indigenous communities who do this in different pipelines all around the Americas, because a lot of these indigenous communities, I mean, they're still around, you know, like we're indigenous, you know, we're here, right? So it's like, but they're also the Native Americans of North America. A lot of these different like communities still exist and they're fighting pipelines wherever they're at. Like right now there's a pipeline line 3 in Minnesota, you know, in Standing Rock, they're fighting the Dakota pipeline, right? So we learned those tactics, those protest tactics from these indigenous communities. I was one of the first people to go down and chain myself to the pipeline, you know, and also in honor of these protesters and also just, you know, to say that we're putting our bodies on the line to so people can wake up to what's happening, to the reality in Brooklyn, what National Grid has been doing to our communities, right? So when that happened, when we went down, a lot of newspapers came and press and all kinds of journalists.
Activists were arrested Monday after they shut down work on the North Brooklyn pipeline, chaining themselves to the construction site. The National Grid-owned pipeline would carry fracked gas through mostly Black and Brown neighborhoods in Brooklyn, despite bans on fracking and new fossil fuel infrastructure in New York, as well as significant community opposition.
When the news sees it, the world sees it, right? and it goes into history. So that's why it's important to do that kind of thing where it catches the attention of people. Because at the end of the day, you know, a lot of people don't want to pay attention to the fact that there is climate change, that it exists and that it's happening, you know? A lot of people now know about the pipeline because of our work.
How did you become interested in working as organizers?
I had a really cool mom. My mom taught me a lot about real history, because a lot of times we don't learn a lot of the true history of our African and Indigenous ancestors, right? Because they've been treated so badly in the past that they even erased our histories. So my mother used to tell me the history that they wouldn't teach me in school. And it really changed the way I thought and how I saw things and how people treat people here in the United States. And I was just so interested in that I was just like, I can't just read. I got to do something about this.
Can you talk more about the protest you do against the North Brooklyn pipeline?
Sure. There's been a lot of work lately. We actually did a protest the other day at the National Grid's like power plant in Greenpoint. The protest was, they projected messages onto the power plant of National Grid. And the projection said things like, site is dangerous to Brooklyn, or like, National Grid, stop poisoning us. National Grid, don't vaporize us. That was with another group called The Illuminator, which uses projections and puts them on big buildings and stuff for different protests. We've also done a lot of flyering in the community. And we do, like, when we flyer, we're also like using that amplifier, you know, people come and they're like, oh my God, learning about the pipeline. So that's another way people have been learning about it, you know, because we've been doing outreach and tabling and different events and things like that, right? Also through mutual aid work that we've been doing. We make art. A lot of our people in Frack at a BK, some of them are graphic artists. They'll make like different zines for us. Zines are like little magazines that show information about a subject. And we would make zines about, you know, about the frack gas that was going through and why we were fighting it. And we would give those out. We give those out at different events and stuff. We've also made like posters that we've posted up in other places. And actually we made a little video with Gia, right? It's called Water Protectors and Land Protectors. It's like a Reading Rainbow kind of episode. And we teach, it's for kids to learn about the pipeline, our fight, and to learn how to become a water protector, a land protector, because we can all become protectors of the earth. Gia narrates the beginning.
Fracking is a process of getting gas out of rocks that are deep in the ground. It is not good for us or the planet. The process of fracking contaminates clean water in Pennsylvania, where the gas is removed from the earth. It then travels through pipelines all the way to Brooklyn. These pipelines are dangerous for the people who live near them because they could leak or explode, pollute the air, make us sick, cost our families money, contribute the warming of Earth's atmosphere, and delay the construction of infrastructure that is better for us and our planet, such as solar panels and heat pumps.
Check it out at FrackOutOfBK on Instagram, and it's really beautiful. Most recently, different groups that were part of Frack Out of Brooklyn Coalition, including my organization, which is Mi Casa Resiste, which I'm a part of. We're right now part of a thing that's called a federal complaint, where we're forcing federal entities to review the actions of National Grid and how they went about choosing this pathway for this pipeline, and if they did the right things in order to do it. So we're waiting right now. We have different actions happening, legal actions, to try to stop this gas from flowing through all of Brooklyn, through all these neighborhoods. And we're trying to also stop, like, so that it can't even be transported around here, because it's like, it's crazy. They want to, like, since they don't want to do the pipeline, they're like, oh, well, we'll transport it then through cars. It's like crazy, because like, this is really toxic materials that we're talking about. And it's not so easy to just transport things through these neighborhoods and not affect the environment. Frack gas is very toxic. That's why it's illegal to frack gas in New York.
So if fracking is illegal in New York, why do you think the North Brooklyn pipeline was able to pass through anyway?
I wish I knew. I feel like it's irrational, right? It's like super irrational. The government of New York State has accepted the fact that drilling for frack gas, right? The way they take out this gas is extremely dangerous. It's toxic. It's toxic to the places where they take out the gas from, like Pennsylvania in this case, and they're transferring it through New York City. But it's really weird. Yeah, it's like, why would they ban it in New York, but let it just pass through? It makes no sense, because it's still dangerous in its gas form, right? Even if it's not being extracted directly from New York State, it's still dangerous gas that's passing through. And the gas that they're using is not for New York. It's not for like people who live here. Companies, obviously, they're doing it for money. A lot of them have been, you know, destroying the earth, you know, because they make money off of this kind of work. So they'll lie to try to continue to do this kind of work and to continue to profit off of the destruction of the earth.
Can you talk about how climate change impacts immigration?
That's a good question. Climate change impacting immigration. So a lot of lands in like, let's say Latin America right now, right? There are some indigenous people who live off the land. Still, indigenous people still live off the land, but you know, in conjunction with the land, right? Not destroying it. It's like they'll harvest it. They grow their food or their agriculture on mountains. And because of climate change, these mountains are drying up. Some of these mountains that have always been kind of lush green and stuff are drying up because of climate change or getting colder. And so a lot of the animals are dying. I just read today that alpacas are dying in the Andes. And so a lot of these families who live off of, let's say, llamas and alpaca, right? Well, they shave the llama like sheep, right? And you make clothes off of it or toys, and that's how they make a living, right? A lot of these families. So these families end up not able to do that anymore because their alpacas are dying. And so they have to move to the US or somewhere, because a lot of the time the US is the easiest thing for a lot of people in the Americas because it's the closest country that has a lot of money, supposedly. But the thing is about this country, the US, it has always gone into other countries, intervened in other countries, and have damaged a lot of the economy of these countries because they've put in different people who are not working for the people's interests of the country. And they're more working for the interests of, like, you know, the US or Europe or, you know, whatever country that has more money that's paying this politician, this president or whatever, right?
What is it like working together as like mother and daughter?
It's cute. I don't know. What do you think? Yeah.
I like it.
What do you like about it?
I like being able to be with you most of the time and being able to go with you to all these protests and these movements and being able to help you out with so much stuff.
I love being around Gia too, obviously, because she's my baby. And so I think like all the mommies like being with their babies, right? And I like that I can teach her more things, you know, that I know that they're probably not teaching her in school right now. And, you know, I want to be able to prepare her for the world, right, that we live in right now, especially when it comes to climate change, because at the end of the day, you know, it's Gia's generation, it's your generation who are going to be the ones who are going to have to deal with the world. It's going to be a very changed world, and hopefully it'll change for the better, you know, with the leadership of you guys when you guys can grow up, right? I love planting seeds with Gia.
After you finish working on this project, what do you think will be different than what it is now?
It's hard to say when this will be finished, when this project will be finished, because we're taking on a big, big monster, right? A big climate change monster. You know, if it finishes, you know, I'm going to go to the next thing, basically, right? Because like there's so many front lines, different places that people can make change, you know, and do something about it. You know, I'm not only focused on climate change, I'm also focused on displacement, on gentrification in our neighborhoods that are displacing Black and brown families from our homes and communities, about housing and how, like, you know, a lot of our families can't even pay the rent in New York City anymore, you know, which is terrible. It shouldn't be that way, you know, because everyone should have a right to a home. So many people's rights are being violated right now, and we need to help be a voice to them and try to push for everyone, because we're not free until we're all free. Right? We're not free until everyone is actually free.
What, if anything, gives you hope?
People give me hope. Like, my friends who are in this struggle with me give me hope. Gia gives me hope. I'm inspired by young people. I'm inspired also by my colleagues, my comrades in this struggle, my friends who are also my neighbors, who are also in this fight with me. Seeing kids like you, you know, on this show gives me a lot of hope. There's more and more kids who are waking up, who are waking up more than a lot of adults are right now, waking up to the reality of how we need to make good change that will respect all of our human rights. You know, a lot of these adults messed up up until now. And, you know, so now it's our job to try to fix it, because at the end of the day, we can't live without Mother Earth, right? Or like, what are we going to eat? We need to protect her, just like our ancestors did, right? we need to go back to that and we need to push for that. I'm hopeful that these seeds will flourish within you guys and that you guys will change this world.
What gives you hope?
What gives me hope is my family and my friends, and also my dad too, because he makes art, a lot of art, and he inspires me to make more art, and my art also inspires me for a better world. My hope for my future is to become an actress, so, and to become a scientist at the same time.
Are there things that everyday people listening to this can do to help?
Absolutely. You could follow us at RakataBK on Instagram. And whenever we have events that we announce, like sometimes we'll have protests, we'll have rallies, and some of them are like family friendly. So like, you know, we like to, or we'll have art builds to make art together against the pipeline, let's say, or art about the earth, you know? So when we have those kinds of things, you can definitely come through to those. And you can do this even on your own. You could create a sign yourself and, you know, post it online, you know, and say like, oh, I'm against the pipeline. I know high school kids have been protesting, and the way they protest is they've done walkouts from their schools, you know, where they coordinate kids to all walk out at the same time from like classes for a purpose. Like it's a protest. It's to say something, right? So that's another kind of protest people could take. But that means you would have to organize your friends, so fellow students, right? And there's just a lot of ways people could get involved. You could make art that's really radical and beautiful and political. Just look for the local community centers in your neighborhood. And they probably have lots of activities and stuff for you to get involved. I think the biggest thing that you can do is talk to your friends, talk to other kids, talk to your cousins about climate change. We need to change. We need to plant more trees. We need to, like, you know, switch from these toxic gases and oil and go towards renewable energy, green energy, right? So those kinds of things you can talk to your family about, inspire them to do something together with you.
Thank you so much for taking the time to do this interview.
Thank you guys so much for hearing me. You guys are super cute. And I love that you guys are doing this. You're so smart. And yeah, y'all give me hope, yo.
Thank you, Abby Levine, for helping us make this podcast episode.
This podcast was produced by IndieKids, a nonprofit 501c3 organization that creates social justice news for kids by kids. In addition to this podcast, IndieKids has a newspaper. Go to our website at www.indiekids.org to read the latest issue or to sign up for one of our writing or podcasting workshops. We're able to do this work and provide our student scholarships thanks to grants, workshop tuition, and individual donors. If you're able, make a tax-deductible donation to IndieKids today. And don't forget to follow us on Instagram and Twitter at IndieKids News. See you next time!